in terms of Blog
Talk Radio.
A terrible situation.
What time is it? Man, I gotta hurry up and get there. Huh, I don't see no cash nowhere. Wait a minute. Yeah, that one over there. Yeah, I...
Another week in the study of soul music.
what we want to really get across to everybody is that this era of music was a spinoff. I mean, all of these musics fell into a combined situation. I was listening to a documentary where I know Dick Clark and several other people were on there, and they were talking about how the rock and roll era coincided with what we are looking at as the soul music era. They were coinciding, and they were all in the same boat, except the rock and roll era kind of ended early with a lot of the people who were in the rock and roll era going over to the soul music era. I mean, you had like Berry Gordy, he was writing for Jackie Wilson. And that was, Jackie Wilson is considered to be a rock and roll star. And he came over to and started Motown, which was an extension of what he was doing for Brunswick Records with Jackie Wilson and several other acts that were Hank Ballard, and they were all coming out of the same situation. But that was the beginning, I mean, of the soul music era, and you had companies popping up all over, well, not all over, you had like Stax Records coming out of the South, basically with some acts that were in the soul music, like Otis Redding. I mean, he was one of the hottest acts in the soul music era. You know, even Sam and Dave were looked at as being rock icons. But we have to look at the different eras. Elvis Presley, I was looking at Jackie Wilson and Elvis Presley were talking about some of the things that they were doing in their acts and their routines that were similar to what the other one was doing. I mean, the leg situation, Jackie was, I mean, with Elvis and Jackie, you know, that was their trademark move, you know, to get the roar from the crowd, from the female sector of the crowd. But that was like I said, at the beginning of the soul music era and the coinciding exactly with the R&B industry, I mean, and the rock and roll industry, because you had like Chess Records out of Chicago with artists like, you know, that were Etta James, who was definitely, you know, like one of the founding people in the R&B industry, and they crossed over to the pop chart. And then you had the hardcore blues acts like Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. But you had rock and roll artists like Chuck Berry and other, you know, artists that were in that vein. But you have to look, Chuck Berry was a major artery in the rock and roll era. And so we just have to, you know, I mean, I was looking at it from a standpoint of, you know, then Berry Gordy, after that era, kind of came to a, it didn't come to an end, but it expanded and expounded, and doing, like saying, the 60s were, yeah, it was rock and roll. I mean, well, the 50s and the early 60s was rock and roll. Then everything kind of went back to a situation, okay, this rock and this, and the only person that was able to really bring it back, I'm not going to say the only person that could ever do it, but he was one of the people that expounded all of the venues. Michael Jackson, he was, I remember Beat It was number one on the pop chart, rock chart, pop chart, I mean pop chart, rock chart, R&B chart, all of them, you know. I mean, it was just one song, and just Beat It, you know. And it was a big song, you know. It was, but it was a song that showed that music was one language. And this group right here, they expounded on it, and I mean they were one of the greatest groups of all time. Soul Music Act, Pop Stars, Earth, Wind and Fire.
solidify, kind of like.
These guys out of Philadelphia, they figured that it's, you got to give the people what they want. Ladies and gentlemen, give the people what they want. Don't change. Another stellar member of the soul music era, a great group coming out of Philadelphia and working with Philadelphia International and being produced and composed for by Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And these were some great writers in the era. And that was the foundation of the soul music era, the writers, the lyric and melody coordination was a very important part of the era. And, you know, you can hear music going from all directions. I mean, a person could write, like, if Love Me Is Wrong, I Don't Want to Be Right, that was written for Stax Records, initially sung, and becoming number one of the number one records in Billboard, and also going platinum and gold, if Love Me Is Wrong. And then Barbara Mandrell redid it, and it was her first number one country western. And these were just some of the things that some of that that were occurring at that time. There weren't any boundaries. If you had the talent, you were able to excel. Wasn't any automatic obstructions being placed in your way for any other reason other than the talent reached its peak. And talent, some people's talent can they can go a little further up the scale, which might amount in millions and millions of dollars. You never know. I mean, it just matter. But at least let the people get potential of a particular person, and if you can do that, then you're looking at, you know, maximizing the worth and ability of a person. But here we go. We're going to look at one person out of the soul music era that was a great artist and sung a great song. George Benson. Pop, R&B, whatever, but just a great singer with a lot of talent. George Benson, the greatest love of all.
Children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my need. A lonely place to be. So I learned to depend on me.
ladies and gentlemen, George Benson. As we were referring earlier about the rock era and the soul music era and all of it coinciding, like we're saying, I look at one of the, we were talking about Berry Gordy, how he was writing in the rock era and, you know, for other, you know, for acts. I mean, one of the main acts that he wrote for was Jackie Wilson, which was considered to be definitely a rock star. And he came out of the rock era with, he knew he had to come with a good song, a great song. And he did. He came with a lot of them. Here's one of the ones that he came with, which I thought was a great song. I mean, but he had so many coming, and he had a style of music that was continuous. I mean, he set it up like, I can understand how he did it, set up like the assembly line situation that he had been so used to dealing with during his short period of time with Ford Motors. But here's one that he came out, he turned out in that assembly line type fashion, but they were all good, great, solid hits. And that's the main thing. So he wanted to know if a person would rather go and buy, they had a dollar, they have $1, they pay a dollar for the music, or go take the dollar and get a sandwich. If they said they wanted to go get the music instead of the sandwich, it's got to be a hit. Stephen Wonder, ladies and gentlemen, Motown.
Keep on learning.
Stevie Wonder from the soul music era and the rock and roll era, but he mainly, you know, came out and went to the pop era and just went everywhere. Stevie Wonder, okay, here we go. Donny Hathaway and Roberta Flack. You Got a Friend. Roberta, You Got a Friend. Major hit record. Here we go with Frankie Beverly, formerly background singer with and guitar player with Marvin Gaye. But now we know him as Maze. Frankie Beverly and Maze. Frankie Beverly and Maze. From the soul music era, here's Lionel Richie with a little Michigan, Detroit soul with art, with some Hollywood mixed in. All right. Soul Town, Sound of Music. And the only thing we can say about soul music era was a great era, and we had people sing songs like we're dealing with the right now, the NCAA tournament. We're gonna hear this great song, which came out of the soul music era. So amazing. Luther Vandross.
A minute have I had since you've come my way. I hope you know I'd gladly go anywhere you take me. It's so amazing to be alive. I'd follow you to the moon.
Luther Vandross. As we do every week, we want to wish everybody love, peace, and soul. And we're going to end with Dr. Martin Luther King and just telling everybody about the kind of dream he had. All right.
Happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until there is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must fail to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote, and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, no, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Yes. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though